Welcome to Bukavu, a far cry from Rwanda. I stare out my Range Rover window, which is rolled all the way up tight, and comb the scene on Bukavu's main drag. The landscape is identical to what I saw in Rwanda. Hills jut along the lake, forming pockets and outcrops draped with greenery. Each hill, dotted with compounds, is a mirror image of the next one. In Bukavu, however, the signs are everywhere that all is not well. It feels raw and dusty. Corroded shop fronts and old lakeside villas stand like outlines in chalk, sketches of a dignified past, imprints of a grandeur that has been stripped and rotted under the chokehold of chaos. I can picture the villas filled with pleasure seekers, people on holiday alongside Mobutu in the lush gardens, savoring tropical fruit and tea with sugar and milk. Today, the old villas are either roofless, crumbling shells, or they're shrouded by high cement walls capped with razor wire and jagged shards of glass. Men in hand-me-down security uniforms stationed at their rusty gates. Open-air jeeps marked UN crawl up and down the streets. They are mounted with giant machine guns and cramped with Pakistani army guys whose hands never wander far from the trigger. Traders line the streets with wooden crates. They're selling phone cards, cassava flour, soaps, or clothes that look like they were rescued from Goodwill bins. The washed-out roads are more like dry riverbeds. I was warned I will need an SUV to drive anywhere outside of Bukavu, but by the look of things, I'll need an SUV to get anywhere inside Bukavu, too. The air is different here. Rwanda breathes, purged of demons, cleansed with soft rains and the government's progressive agenda. It hums with prospects. Not so in Congo. The air here is thick with paranoia, like rancid garbage dumped by strangers and left to fester in the yard. Women, like pack mules, carry loads of cassava flour, firewood, stone, and other commodities up steep hills. Sometimes their cargo is twice their size. With the impassable roads and gutted local economy, there are few vehicles left, and all the livestock and bicycles have been looted. The transport of last resort is the backs of women. They transfer petty goods to keep the essentials of life and the local economy crawling forward. Those loads must weigh, what, 150 pounds? Hunched over, women lug the loads with straps slung around their foreheads, digging into their skin. They are sweating, steady, focused. It's a struggle journalist Ted Koppel once compared to the Greek myth of Sisyphus, who was determined to keep rolling a boulder up a mountain, only to have it roll back down again and again for all eternity. Surprisingly, the Congolese seem to be quite fashion conscious. Their clothes are neat and pressed, with their hair in colorful braids or wigs. They wear traditional African wraps and dresses, or sport American cast-offs, t-shirts, fashion jeans, and sporty tennis shoes. Many look worthy of a diesel ad campaign. One local hipster seems perfectly packaged to open an indie rock concert as he saunters around in a tiger print cowboy hat and a faux fur-lined jacket, peering out from behind trendy sunglasses. But all that primping can't hide the unmistakable mark of war in these people's eyes. I notice the eyes again when we arrive at the Women for Women compound, a two-story whitewashed building surrounded by round, open-air classrooms built of wood and straw. Morning classes disbanded some time ago, but three women linger in the courtyard garden of cosmos and marigolds. Two of them inch towards me, curious. With the impenetrable language barrier between us and no one around to translate, we smile and attempt a few false starts at conversation that can't get beyond, "Hello."